Welcome to the Sunstone Podcast, everybody. I'm one of your co-hosts, Stephen Carter. Those who have been following Utah politics have probably heard that the Utah legislature recently voted overwhelmingly to pass a bill stating that polygamy would no longer be a felony, but would rather be an infraction, much like a traffic offense, that doesn't involve jail time. Polygamy has been a felony in Utah for 85 years. It's a pretty interesting development when you think about how Utah legislators are overwhelmingly Republican, a party that was initially launched to destroy what they called the twin relics of barbarism, slavery, and polygamy. It's also interesting when you consider how much polygamy has affected so many branches of the Mormon movement. It just about drove the Salt Lake Church into extinction, though since then, of course, the church has taken every opportunity to publicly distance itself from earthly polygamy, though it certainly still accepts heavenly polygamy. After all, two of its members of the First Presidency are sealed to two women. But of course, in the United States, marriage is being rethought in response to technologic, economic, and social landscape that's vastly different from anything we've experienced before. For example, it used to be that, you know, by about age 10, a kid was pretty well a productive member of the family, adding to the family's resources and income. But now, a child usually doesn't really start producing resources or earning income until at least age 16. And then they don't usually funnel the resources that they do create into the family. It's theirs. It's actually an incredibly costly endeavor to raise a child, so much so that it often takes two incomes to do so. And even when the child becomes a legal adult, it's becoming more and more common for them to remain dependent on the family's resources without contributing to them. So monogamy as a social technology isn't as effective as it once was. And people are beginning to understand that, so they're looking for ways to create families that can function well in our current context. So the question is, why not make polygamy an option? This is the approach George R. Compton takes in his Sunstone article called Cultural, Demographic, and Judicial Trends Leading Toward the Popular Acceptance and Eventual Legalization of Polygamy, a Libertarian Polemic, which is probably a contender for longest article title in Sunstone's history. I think this is a particularly interesting article because of how steadfast it is in not wearing any kind of rose-colored glasses. Compton isn't presenting polygamy as an ideal or a utopia, but simply as an option that has certain pros and cons. So George Compton has a PhD from economics from UCLA, and he writes on various subjects ranging from U.S. Middle Eastern policy to immigration and education reforms, and he's a frequent presenter at the Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium. So with that background, let's get into his article. Legalized polygamy is coming to the USA. This article describes the cultural, demographic, and judicial trends leading to that eventuality. It also discusses how polygamy's legalization can be accomplished without the nationally divisive rancor that surrounded the legalizations of abortion and same-sex marriage. But first, two clarifications. First, the focus of this article's advocacy is to American society in general, not to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or its leadership. Second, I won't be championing polygamous marriage as some ideal. Rather, I'll be showing how legalized polygamy can serve to ameliorate some of this country's worsening social ills and shortcomings. The first trend to note is a cultural one. Polygamy is being portrayed more or less favorably on television, with programs such as Big Love and Sister Wives. The family, documented in Sister Wives, has helped to destigmatize polygamy by distancing itself from the FLDS and its despicable leader, Warren Jeffs, who is now serving time in prison for child sexual abuse. In addition, the family's attorney was successful at getting a U.S. District Court in Utah to rule that Utah's anti-bigamy law is unconstitutional. While the 10th U.S. Circuit Court in Colorado subsequently overturned the Utah decision based on a technicality, it is likely that major litigation on this subject has just begun. The second trend involves America's commitment to multiculturalism. Refugees arriving from the Middle East and Africa will undoubtedly include polygamists. That there is nothing unambiguously opposed to polygamy in the Bible should soften Christian opposition to the practice. Academia is contributing its own part to this trend, especially in the field of evolutionary behavioral science, where a recent book argues that humans, akin to most advanced species, are hardwired to be polygamous. Further, the American imagination has already adapted to same-sex marriage. The same tolerance should encompass polygamy as well. As is the case with gay marriage, percentage-wise, very few people are expected to actually engage in plural marriage. But I'm projecting an increasing degree of sympathy for those who would want to, and a growing belief that those people should enjoy the same legal privileges afforded to monogamists. What are those privileges? Legalization would grant access to spousal, government, and welfare benefits, including post-divorce protections, for example, asset distributions, and automatic inheritance entitlements. Bringing polygamy out of the shadows would also make way for the institution of such critical regulations as minimum marriage age restrictions and prior wife's or wives' consent requirements. Finally, and probably most importantly, as we saw in the demand for same-sex marriage rather than just a civil union or domestic partnership, legalization bestows the valued imprimatur of social and moral legitimacy. The final set of trends leading to a broader acceptance of polygamy is demographic in nature. I will describe 9 examples. Their polygamous resolution comports with the value of accommodating mutual consent among responsible adults. 1. Men are running away from marriage. Between 1970 and 2012, the share of males aged 30 to 50 who are married has dropped from 91% to 64% for median income workers, and from 86% to 50% for the bottom 25th percentile workers. Quote, among never married adults ages 30 to 50, men, 27%, are more likely than women, 8%, to say that they do not want to marry. That mismatch would be remedied to some degree by providing women access to those men who do want to be married and who would be desirous and capable of taking on more than one spouse. 2. 20% of women will never have offspring under current conditions. Might not some of these women enter in polygamy if such provided the only social and legally acceptable avenue to motherhood? 3. At the age of 85, there are 2 women for every man, a prime opportunity for polygyny. Engaging in sex may be largely a non-factor here. Companionship would probably be the main benefit, or at least having nearby a handyman or provider of other domestic services. 4. 40% of new births lack a married mother. How many of those unmarried mothers would have been willing to enter into a legal polygamous relationship instead of an extramarital one, had the opportunity been available? 5. The current norm of 2 or fewer children per mother means that a husband could have two or three wives and still participate in rearing fewer children than was the rule a little over a century ago. 6. Men in our modern economy are falling behind in employment and education. The male labor force participation has dropped from 80% in 1970 to 69% now. Simultaneously, more women than men are now attending and graduating from college. Might some educated women accept sharing an educated, well-employed husband if the alternative were exclusive access to an undereducated, underemployed, monogamous husband? 7. Female participation in the workforce is now the norm. Given labor-saving household appliances, it is feasible for several women to marry a single male. He and or one of the wives could perform the major housekeeping duties, including caring for the infants of those who choose to have children, while keeping their jobs. 8. Instead of engaging in serial monogamy, divorcing and moving from one spouse to the next, wouldn't some couples contemplating divorce prefer instead to enter a polygamous marriage, saving them the travail, expense, and disruption of divorce? Along similar lines, how many extramarital relations would be avoided if the would-be lovers and mistresses possessed a polygamous marriage option? As you can see from these scenarios, there are a number of aspects of our current condition that leave a little or a lot to be desired. But while the overall affected percentage may be small, not a few Americans, particularly women, might find their circumstances improved by participating in a polygamous household. As I've said before, I'm not proffering the legalization of polygamy as something that will bring society closer to utopia, but rather as a potential ameliorative to a less than perfect world, with males bearing the greater culpability. There are good reasons why polygamy is not associated with some ideal world. The most compelling general argument against its legalization is that polygamy is commonly regarded as an obstacle to societal advancement. Having to provide for a wife and children has long been considered the best way to channel males' energies and talents toward socially productive ends. Large-scale polygamy can generate a large number of males who, unfairly or not, lack any prospect of marriage, leading them toward lives of violence, sloth, poverty, and crime. It is noteworthy that, unlike its neighboring early Middle Eastern civilizations, the ascendant Greece and Rome outlawed polygamy for their own citizens. Another argument against polygamy is that it is degrading to women, and therefore contrary to the ideal of equality between the sexes. Polygamy is also seen to be inimical to good child-rearing, forcing children to share their father with the children of other mothers. Finally, having more than one spouse at the same time simply seems unnatural to an overwhelming majority of Americans. Right now, only 16% accept polygamy as a valid lifestyle, although that is up from 7% in 2001. Now, to counter those anti-polygamy arguments, bearing in mind our context is a far from perfect world. While it is true that children in a polygamous family would have to share a father, it is not uncommon now for kids to have to share their mothers with kids from several different fathers, all of them absent. Potentially coupling some of those mothers in a polygamous wedlock early on would have spared both the kids and the mothers the fatherless circumstance. As for society doing better by having almost all of its males working so as to provide for a spouse and children, that train left America's station long ago. Solid blue-collar and sub-blue-collar employment opportunities have been declining in the American economy. This has left us with a vast army of under- or unemployed males, many of whom are also burdened by self-destructive or otherwise pathological habits involving drug and alcohol abuse, gambling, pornography, and street crime. Further, with easy access to welfare benefits, women and children have been somewhat liberated from a husband's or father's paycheck. Consequently, we have a lot of men in our society who act as if they are economically superfluous. Small-scale polygamy would hardly make matters worse. As far as polygamy's current lack of popular support is concerned, all that needs to be said is that the public's tastes and values change over time. And if the recent rate of increase in the acceptance of polygamy is any indication of future trends, this country does not have long to wait. Also, the endorsement rate doesn't have to be uniform across the country. Polygamy would best be legalized the same way marijuana, physician-assisted suicide, and same-sex marriage were originally legalized. In other words, state by state, over the years. Doing so in this organic fashion would be preferable to turning legalization over to the Supreme Court. If there is any doubt about that, compare the aftermath of the court's rulings of Hope v. Wade, nationwide legalized abortion, and Obergefell v. Hodges, nationwide legalization of same-sex marriage, with the significantly smaller outcries that took place after Oregon and then other states legalized physician-assisted suicide, and similarly when Colorado and then other states legalized marijuana. This approach keeps the decisions with elected representatives rather than with an appointed body, allowing each state's citizenry to retain some power over how quickly their state's laws are changing. And if some citizens find themselves too uncomfortable in their present locale, they can move to a state whose laws better reflect their values. How might the LDS Church fit into this future? Interestingly, I think Utah, with its high male employment and marriage rates, would actually be less likely to see polygamy as an attractive choice for females. And considering how fresh is the memory of persecution over polygamy, I certainly wouldn't expect church leaders to join the early advocacy for legalizing polygamy. Since it will be likely some time before mainline American Christians in particular will be ready to accept polygamy as a morally legitimate way to live, it would be a deeply off-putting move for the church to advocate for legalization anytime soon. The church will likely be willing to see polygamy become formally decriminalized and leave it at that. Second best would be an expansion of legally recognized civil unions and domestic partnerships to encompass three or more participants. However, the moral and social stature accompanying the label marriage will definitely be sought by polygamists as part of the legal package. And when that happens, the church will face an interesting problem if it attempts to maintain its current tactic of preserving the term marriage only for heterosexual monogamy. Such would be tantamount to admitting that plural marriage is intrinsically sinful, instead of a sacred practice put on hold. Characterizing plural marriage as immoral in and of itself would constitute a seemingly fatal accusation against the role of polygamy in the early church as being a key element in the restoration of all things. An inability to make a prima facie case for polygamy's fundamental immorality will render the church unable to coherently oppose its legalization. Perhaps the church will simply watch in silence as the marriage practice that threatened to destroy it is gradually accepted and legalized. That was, say it with me, everyone, cultural, demographic, and judicial trends leading toward the popular acceptance and eventual legalization of polygamy, a libertarian polemic, by George R. Compton. Now, we here at Sunstone work hard to push the Mormon conversation forward. So we're always looking for ideas, perspectives, and experiences that open up new possibilities in our theology, culture, and practice. On the Sunstone Magazine podcast, which you can access at patreon.com/sunstone, we recently published a few other approaches to polygamy, including one where the members of a polygamous marriage try to figure out ways to make their relationship more egalitarian. It's quite fascinating. Head on over to our Patreon site, again, patreon.com/sunstone. We have a few free episodes there, and then it's easy and inexpensive to sign up. Well, thanks again for joining me for this week's episode of the Sunstone Podcast. We'll talk to you again soon.